Hello and welcome to Trails Worth Hiking, the show that brings you some of the most interesting backpacking and trekking routes in the world. I'm your host, Jeremy Pendry. In the first part of the show, we bring you the story and history of a trail. Then we tell you what it's like to hike the trail and how you can do it. On this episode, we go to the Great Lakes. No, not those Great Lakes. These Great Lakes sit at more than 10,000 feet up in the Himalayas. But this time, it's not the Himalayas of Nepal like in episodes 14 and 15. These are an even more mysterious part of the Himalayas and have a distinct beauty, nothing like the deep river gorges and treacherous passes of Nepal. In this part of the Himalayas, we see treeless green valleys filled with wildflowers and beautiful sky blue lakes, all surrounded by impressive peaks. On this episode of Trails Worth Hiking, we go to Kashmir, a land whose ownership has long been disputed. But today, the Kashmir Valley is part of India, and we follow the path of the Kashmir Great Lakes Trek. Oh, let the sun beat down upon my face, and stars fill my dream. I'm a traveler of both time and space, to be where I have been, to sit with elders of the gentle race, this world has seldom seen. They talk of days for which they sit and wait, all will be revealed. Okay, here I'm going to skip a few verses and a chorus. Oh, pilot of the storm, who leaves no trace, like sorts inside a dream. Leave the path that led me to that place, yellow desert stream. My Shangri-La beneath the summer moon, I will return again, as the dust that floats high in June, we're moving through Kashmir. Written once upon a time by Robert Plant, Jimmy Page, and John Bonham. I think the song Kashmir by Led Zeppelin certainly evokes some of the mystery that we still feel today about the place. So I'm excited in this episode to talk about the Kashmir Great Lakes Trek. On the show today is Ludmilla Glandu. Mia Glandu is originally from France, but lives in India, and hiked the Kashmir Great Lakes Trek this past summer. Mia is also my French teacher that I use through iTalki, which is an online platform where you can learn languages through private tutors, through Skype or Zoom or whatever system you want to use to speak with them. And I highly recommend Mia. She's a great French teacher. She's also a Spanish teacher. I really enjoyed taking French classes with her. I studied French once upon a time when I was in middle school and high school and college and learned absolutely nothing. But I've been trying to learn it again, and Mia has been a great help for me in doing that. So if you're interested in studying either French or Spanish, Ludmilla Glandu on iTalki is a good option. In any event, the way this episode came about is kind of interesting. I was taking one of my French lessons with Mia, and she mentioned that she had gone trekking in Kashmir, and I was surprised to hear that that was even possible. My experience in the Himalayas, as you may know from episodes 14 and 15, has been in Nepal. And I'd heard of hiking in Ladakh. Ladakh is part of Kashmir, but a little different area than the part of Kashmir we're going to be talking about today. And I was intrigued when I heard about this Great Lakes trek that really is in the heart of what is the disputed part of Kashmir. And Kashmir seems so mysterious, I think, to Westerners as this high mountain land. You know, it's has a rich history. And Kashmir today has been highly disputed by both India and Pakistan, with also some claims on parts of it by China. And so it just seemed like a really interesting part of the world to focus on and to do an episode on. And so I asked Mia to talk about her adventure in Kashmir. So let's back up and talk about where Kashmir is. As I mentioned, of course, it's in the Himalayas, But it's in a different part of the Himalayas than most people are familiar with, I think, or at least most Westerners. The area that is today called Kashmir is really three different kinds of land masses. There's the foothill plains of Jammu. So you have sort of a lower altitude area, lower elevation area. And then there's the Kashmir Valley, which is the part we're going to be focusing on today. And so that's a part of Kashmir that has a lot of the population. And there's, you know, surrounded by beautiful mountains. And then there's also, as I mentioned, the mountain area of Ladakh, which is a little different area. Kashmir has a very rich fauna. There are bears, snow leopards, deer, fox, wolves, hundreds of different kinds of bird species. And as you'll hear Mia talk about, the wildflowers can be impressive there. Kashmir has always been a sort of zone of transition between China and India. Alexander the Great went to Kashmir. His horse, Bucephalus, died in the Battle of Hydaspes and is buried in Kashmir. Buddhism came to Kashmir about 250 BC, brought by the Emperor Ashoka. The capital of Kashmir, which is Srinagar, is a city that's more than 2,000 years old. So after Buddhism came to Kashmir, eventually Hinduism came to Kashmir, which began to grow substantially in the 7th century AD. But then in the 14th century, Islam became dominant in Kashmir as a result of the Sultan dynasty. Later in 16th century, the Mughal Empire controlled Kashmir. The Mughals were a group of people from Central Asia. And then in the 18th century, Kashmir was controlled by the Durrani Empire from Afghanistan. And then in the 19th century, Kashmir was ruled by a Sikh dynasty from Punjab. And that dynasty extended the boundaries to what we think of as modern Kashmir. Finally, from the late 19th to the mid-20th century, there was the princely state of Jammu and Kashmir, which was basically controlled by the British Raj. So the British came in and controlled India, and they left certain folks in power in Kashmir that they could control. And this was the Dogra dynasty. The Dogra dynasty does bring us an interesting story, though, which is the story of Gulab Singh. So Gulab Singh was born in 1792. So in 1808, Sikh rule began in Kashmir. And the ruler at the time was Ranjit Singh, and Gulab was part of his army. And then in 1820, Ranjit Singh was exiled from Kashmir, and he gave control of the region to Gulab's father. But shortly after that, in 1822, Gulab's father died, and Gulab became the Raja of Kashmir. So in 1822, after Gulab became Raja, he essentially created his own kingdom in Kashmir. He got a certain amount of autonomy from the other six. And so Gulab plays it so that he is now essentially an independent ruler adjacent to the Sikh kingdom that had ruled Kashmir up to that point since 1808. But then in 1839, the Sikh ruler dies and the British take over Punjab. But Gulab had decided to keep Kashmir out of the conflict with the British. And as a result, the British make him Maharaja as a tributary, as someone who essentially reports up to them, but has control as a king in Kashmir. And Gulab pays a significant amount of money to the British for this right. So what's interesting about this guy, if you think about it in the end, is first he starts out as under the six. Then he figures out a way to take control for himself from the six who had put him in power. And then when he sees the British coming and sees the writing on the wall, he decides to stay out of the fight between the six and the British. And ultimately, the British reward him for that by letting him keep control of Kashmir. So at the end of the day, he really answered to no one and figured out a way to keep control for himself. So I think of Gulab Singh as a guy with a pretty smart take on realpolitik and an interesting character that is sort of central to the formation of modern Kashmir. Gulab Singh dies in 1857, But the Dogra dynasty that he began continued until 1947, when the British finally left India. So let's jump ahead to talk about this conflict that develops over who owns Kashmir when the British leave. So India and Pakistan both claim ownership of Kashmir in 1947, when it's clear that the British are leaving and the Kashmir is going to fall into the hands of somebody else. Pakistan in 1947 starts incursions into Kashmir. And at the time, the Dogra dynasty is still in control, and they see that Kashmir needs help. And in October 1947, Kashmir accedes to India as a way to essentially get Indian help to avoid Pakistan taking over Kashmir. At the time, part of Kashmir becomes part of Pakistan. And this is where the formation of the sort of modern boundary lines between India and Pakistan comes about. Ultimately, India and Pakistan end up fighting three wars over Kashmir and several more skirmishes. In the midst of all this, in the 1950s, China took over a portion of Kashmir because the northern and northeastern border of Kashmir has some of its border along the border with China. China took over the Xinjiang region in the 1950s. And then in 1962, the Chinese actually invaded Ladakh and later were pushed back there. So today, there's an established line of control that divides Kashmir. India has a little bit over half of Kashmir. Pakistan has about a third of it. And the rest, about, you know, the last 20% or so, is part of Chinese Tibet. India has 55% of the land, but also 70% of the people. One of the things that's interesting about Kashmir is the Muslim identity that began in the 14th century has remained. In Kashmir, 70% of the people are Muslim. And a significant majority of the Muslims would want to be part of Pakistan or be independent, which creates a lot of tension in the region. So why does Pakistan care so much about Kashmir? One reason is that all of Pakistan's water, all of its fresh water, comes from the Indus River, which flows through the Indian parts of Kashmir. So Pakistan essentially gets all of its water from Kashmir. India gets water from Kashmir as well, but also has water from other sources. If India were to cut off Pakistan's access to water, it would be a huge problem for Pakistan. In the 1960s, there was a water treaty that would guarantee Pakistan the right to obtain the water it needs, but still you could see how fragile that might feel to Pakistan. And so Pakistan certainly has an interest in this resource that's hugely important to it, in addition to the regional Muslim identity that identifies more with Pakistan than with India in at least parts of Kashmir. In any event, the dispute between India and Pakistan over Kashmir continues, and neither side is willing to concede. Lately, there has been more increasing radicalization of parts of the Muslim population there. In the 1990s, I believe, a group of Hindu that had lived in Srinagar alongside Muslims were essentially moved out. These are the Pandits, and have moved south to Jammu. And what this has caused is there's more of a separation today between the Muslims and the Hindus. The Hindus are more in the south, the Muslims more in the north and west. There continues to be unrest and protests regularly. Not that long ago, there were killings that there are allegations that the police were involved in. In 2019, there was a suicide bombing by an Islamist separatist that killed 40 Indian soldiers. All right, well, it's not the place of this show to take sides or judge any of this from where I sit. I mention all of this so you have some context for the region, but it doesn't change the fact that this is an absolutely astounding place to go hiking. And that there are ways to do this safely, particularly through trekking companies. Anyway, let's finish up the history of Kashmir. Today, Srinagar wants independence from India. And Jammu, the Hindu area, wants to be part of India. So you have that split between the Hindu and Muslim populations. Article 370 of the Indian Constitution gives a certain amount of autonomy to Kashmir, even though it's still part of India. Essentially, it allows Kashmir to have its own constitution. Despite Article 370, by 1970, Kashmir was pretty well integrated with India. But recently, in 2019, India revoked most of Article 370 and subjected Kashmir now to the Indian Constitution. This resulted in protests and lockdowns and troops going in. And as part of India's revoking of Article 370, it divided Kashmir into two territories, with one called Kashmir and Jammu and the other Ladakh as a separate area. There have been border skirmishes in Kashmir as recently as November 2020, which left 22 people dead. In researching this episode, I came across an opinion piece in Al Jazeera that stated the following. A brief look back in history makes it evident that Kashmir's oppression and colonial exploitation started long before the formation of modern India. Ever since its annexation by the Mughal Empire in 1589 AD, Kashmir has never been ruled by Kashmiris themselves. So although this crossroads between India, Pakistan, and China has politically taken the brunt of a lot of violence and a lot of conflict in its history, that doesn't change the fact that it's in a beautiful spot in the Himalayas with an ancient culture, an interesting people, and is somewhere worth seeing if it can be done safely, which I think today it can be done safely through using a trekking company. And as you'll hear from Mia during the interview, there's really no issue once you're out on the trail. And you just have to be conscious of where you are, I think, when you're in Srinagar, the main city. The area itself is beautiful. There are lakes and passes. The trail has three major passes, the highest being Gadsar Pass. And that's at over, 13,750 feet, which is about 4,190 meters. There are a number of beautiful lakes. Although, I should point out that even during the trek, when you get to Gadsar Meadow on the far side of Gadsar Pass going north, you are very close to the line of control between India and Pakistan. But don't take it from me. Let's now jump into the conversation with Mia Glandu, where we can hear from Mia about how wonderful this place is and why you should consider trekking there. Mia Glandu, welcome to the show. Thank you for being here.
Merci.
Bonjour, comment ça va?
Ça va bien, merci. Merci de m'accueillir.
Cette fois, on va parler en anglais.
Oh, ok. Ça marche.
Très bien. Yes, it's very strange for me to talk to you in English because all the other times we've spoken has been mostly in French.
Yeah, that's right. I don't even recognize your voice now. It's different. You have a different voice in English.
Oh, wow. Yeah. I think people, when they speak a foreign language, maybe they have a little bit of a different personality when they speak in a language, particularly if they don't speak the language that well.
Definitely.
Okay. Which is me in French. So
no, I wasn't saying that.
Well, thank you for coming. And just for listeners to know, you are not only someone who has hiked the Kashmir Great Lakes Trail, the Kashmir Great Lakes Trek that we're going to be talking about, but you are also my French teacher.
Yes.
And and you are also a Spanish teacher as well, right?
Correct. Yeah. I'm a Spanish teacher too, yeah.
And you are originally from where in France?
So I'm from the northwest of France. It's called Bretagne. So my mom is from there. My dad is from the Caribbean. So I have half Caribbean blood, half French, north of France blood. So yeah.
But you grew up in the north of France?
Yes, I grew up there until I was 18. I stayed. I never left France.
Wow. So that's interesting because after you were 18, you've lived in several other places, right?
Yeah. I think I wanted to know the world when I was 18. My parents told me, now you are Like legally, you can go. So I said, okay. So I took my backpack and I went. I went to Mexico. That was the first country I've been.
So you lived in Mexico for a while, but you've also lived in Scotland and Sweden. Is that right?
Yeah, a little bit. Scotland, then Sweden for 5 years. Yeah.
Wow. But now you live in India.
Correct. Yeah.
How did you come to live in India?
Well, I just had some job opportunities and I always wanted, I love traveling. I love discovering new culture. And I feel when we are bored somewhere, like when we stay for more than 4 years in a place, we should move. So I thought, yeah, it's too comfortable in Sweden. I should find another adventure. And then India came and I felt it was the right thing to do. So I left Sweden for India.
How long have you been in India?
Only 8 months.
Oh, wow. Okay. So when we started working together, you as my teacher, you hadn't been in India very long.
No. I went in India and then lockdown came. So, yeah. I've been in India for 8 months, but I mostly stayed at home and on my computer because of
yes,
the lockdown.
Yes. Yes. Is India today, I mean, we're talking in toward the end of 2021, is India still mostly in lockdown?
No, it's not. People still being a little bit careful, but mostly Okay. Everything is normal again, yeah.
Okay. And so we're going to be talking about the Kashmir Great Lakes trek that you did a few months ago.
Yes.
How did you get into trekking, and have you done trekking before, or was this the first time?
No, I started trekking when I was maybe, I will say 7 years old, because my parents were crazy about it. So
Oh, wow. We
went as
okay.
a family in the Pyrenees and the Alps many times during summer. The first time I went trekking, I was very young. I hated it so much because it was tiring.
I have a question about that, because I always took my kids on backpacking and trekking trips and they still like it. They're young adults now and they still love trekking. Uh-huh. So I think your parents must have done something right, because you didn't like it when you were young maybe, but now you've come back to it.
Yeah, sure. Obviously, we complain mostly when we were teenagers. We complained a lot, like, why is it tiring? It's just mountain and forest. Why are we doing this? But obviously, it's a unique experience, and all of us like hiking now. And we were four. I have three brothers. So, yeah. So, yeah, definitely, it's good to do with kid, I think. I will do that with my kid if I have kids.
That's a good idea. So how did you learn about this particular trek, the Kashmir Great Lakes trek? How did you hear about it?
I was talking with an Indian friend, and he told me, like, there is many treks you can do from here. And then He told me, like, he has done so many treks, but the best trek for him was Great Lakes, Kashmir. So I said, okay, why not? So I had holidays. So I said, okay, I just need to take this chance to go. And yeah, I decided to go there.
And who did you go trekking with? Was it through a tour group where there was a number of people who you didn't know, or did you go with friends?
No, so it's a group, it's called Indian Hikes. So it's a company, and they organize different treks everywhere in India. It's very, very nice company. And then it was only people that I didn't know, only Indians. I was the only foreigner because it was COVID time as well. So yeah, it was a very nice experience.
That's interesting. No, I guess I don't know enough about India to know the language situation. Do the people primarily speak English when they're together on a trek like that, or would they speak different languages?
Well, it's like, I think people who has the chance to go to a trek like this and pay, they normally people from that has money, and people who have money had education, so they speak English, all of them, very great English. And then because people from South India maybe doesn't speak Hindi, so they use normally English as well.
Okay. So I won't have any problem when I want to go to trek in. Okay. All right. And so one of the things that I found interesting about this hike is that it looks like it's a hike that's mostly a summer hike, right? It was mid-July or August, somewhere around there when you did this hike?
Yes, it was in June, yeah.
Oh, it was in June. Okay.
Yeah.
And so what's interesting about that to me is I've trekked in a different part of the Himalayas in Nepal. And in Nepal, the trekking season is mostly in the spring and the fall because of the monsoons. But in this part of India, mm-hmm. where the Kashmir Great Lakes trek is, it seems like summer is fine, or summer is actually the best time to do it.
So, yeah, it depends. So we have been very lucky or blessed, depending. Yeah, because the 2 weeks before us, all the trek have been canceled. Because of the rain. It had been raining for 2 weeks without stopping. Even if Kashmir normally doesn't have the rainy season like other places of India, still they had really bad luck. So 2 weeks before us, it was only raining every day. So when we arrived, wow. it was raining as well. And then we didn't see the rain for the 6 days. So yeah, we have been very lucky. Yeah,
that's perfect.
Yeah.
So I guess, though, for people who are thinking about doing this trek, it is really summer is the time to do it.
Yeah, I think it was very nice weather. Like, it wasn't too cold, and then it wasn't too hot neither, because it was a little bit rainy. So, yeah, I definitely say it's a good time to do it. Yeah. I don't know if it's the best time, because I cannot compare.
Okay, but you definitely need to be, no matter when you do it, you do need to be ready for rain. You have to have clothing that's to be prepared for rain.
Yeah, definitely. And then it's for the sun too, like, because it's really easy to get burned as well. So yeah, both rain and sun.
Is it possible that it would snow even in the summer?
It's not going to snow. No, I don't think so. But we saw some snow still. We're high enough. No, I don't think it's snow in June, July, August. I don't think so.
Okay. And so the distance for this hike is about 80 to 85 kilometers. Does that sound about right?
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
For Americans, that's about 50 miles. Mm-hmm. And you did this trek over about 6 days. And do you think most companies do that, about 6 or 7 days?
Yeah, I think so. Is it really, physically, I didn't find it challenging at all. It's a really easy hike, I would say, because yeah, physically it's not hard, like, to be honest. Yeah,
but you're probably in better shape than most people.
Yeah, the thing is, the funny thing is, like, okay, that sounds very bad, but it's true. Even we joke about India with Indian about it. It's like Indian people normally doesn't do much sport, like, really. So. For them, like, they felt they were fit, but the first day, like, I realized, like, no, they were not sporty people at all. And so for me, I was, like, walking normally, and they were suffering a lot. So for Indian, it was difficult trek. But for me, it was like, no, comparing to the trek I've done before, it was very light, yeah.
And so how many hours per day are you actually hiking on a trek like this?
Maybe 7 hours. But we do a lot of breaks, like a lot, because it's a group, you know?
Yeah. How many people were in the group?
Okay. That was a big negative point of the trek, actually, because normally it's between 10 and 15, but because it has been canceled, so many treks have been canceled, another group joined us. So we were almost 30.
Oh, wow.
So that was, in my opinion, too big group. And obviously, because not everyone was fit, we advanced very, very slowly.
Yeah, that can be frustrating. I know that feeling. But yeah, I guess the circumstances are, at least under the circumstances, at least you got to go on the trek during COVID. That's still pretty good.
Yeah. And then you enjoy everything and you meet so many different people and you just don't think about the group, the big group. So yeah.
And this is a trek where it's all camping, or are there villages?
No, so the first base camp, you can see a little village. It's not what you would call a village, I guess. You have some kind of houses, but maybe 5 or 6, and people maybe who has some cows, or maybe I don't know what they do, but yeah. But that's the only people we have seen, and then we go up and we didn't see any village or. Yeah, there were some chai very interesting chai place to buy some chai in the middle of nowhere. So they were this.
But there's a little tea shop.
Yeah, tea shop, we'll say, yeah. To buy some chai. Apart from that, there were no one living there.
Okay, so it's all camping. But there are porters who bring, are there porters who carry all the camping equipment?
Yes, so the company organized that. So they carry the tents and the sleeping bags and the food. Yeah.
Okay, that makes it a lot easier.
Yes.
All right. And it looks like the elevation on this trip is pretty high up. It goes all the way up to 4,200 meters at the highest point. And from it, what it looks like is that most of the camps are between 3,300 and 3,600 meters. Mm-hmm. So pretty high up. And for Americans, that's a maximum of 13,800 feet. And most camps between 11 and 12,000 feet. So you're at pretty high elevation. Maybe that's why many of the Indians were having a hard time mm-hmm. with the hiking.
I didn't feel it personally. Like, actually, okay, I'm really not someone that gets prepared properly. So we were supposed to have some drugs, some medicine to help us to adapt. And it was a must. And I didn't read the list because, I don't know, I just came to the hike. And then I was the only one that didn't have drugs.
Is it Diamox?
Yeah, this, I think, I guess. Uh-huh. But yeah. So the guy told me, okay, well, do you feel bad? It's okay, we'll see. But no, I didn't feel any symptom. So it was good. No, it wasn't too bothering, yeah.
So when you were carrying your own equipment, what are you carrying? Just clothes, really? Or what other equipment do you need to carry during the trek?
Yeah. Your clothes, your personal things. I carried some extra food because I'm a foodie. So I had some nuts, basically, and yeah, some bars, cereal bars, and yeah, mostly this. They have the option to offload your bag that I think is, yeah, you don't have a heavy bag because you only have your clothes then.
Right.
But some people offload their bags, yeah.
And so I guess because you have guides, there's no need to worry about staying on the trail or maps or things like that. You have someone who knows the route.
And even if you don't take a guide for this trek, actually, if you're thinking about doing this trek, you don't need a map. It's very well done. You can see the path. Like, I was looking at it, like, yeah, you definitely you cannot get lost. And it's a bit touristy, so you will always see some trekkers around. So it's like, yeah, it's easy to not get lost in this trek.
Okay. So one of the questions I have is about Kashmir, because from the United States, we hear so much in the news about the difficulties, the political difficulties in Kashmir. Are there any concerns that you had about that? Or do you have to take any precautions with respect to the political situation? Or is that really not an issue where this hike is?
Yeah, it's an issue.
Okay.
Yeah. But I think for me, I'm so happy it's still an issue because, no, in a way, I'm being a bit sarcastic, because if not, it will be destroyed by tourists, because it's the most mm-hmm. beautiful place. Like, it's wonderful. And I think if Indian or foreigner will know and will have an easy way to Kashmir, it will be destroyed by tourism, like, definitely. Because it's easy to trek, and so many lakes, so many flowers, and you cannot find easy way to beautiful nature like this.
What are the concerns then? Like, what did you have to do for precautions?
So you never know if there is going to be a terrorist attack. For example, when you go to the station, to the airport, you have militaries everywhere, and they can lock down the city like this if there is any attack. It happened quite often. Then when you are on the trek, you are kind of safe because it's touristy. But still, when you are near Pakistan, I think at one point we were 30 kilometers from Pakistan only. Then you have military, they come and check on you. And for me, because I was a foreigner, they took me for 25 minutes because they didn't understand why they were a foreigner here in Kashmir in the middle of lockdown. So they check my passport, they call, and they were, okay, why are you doing here? What are you doing here? And so they were a bit suspicious about about a foreigner being here. So I guess it can be some situation, but if you go with a guide and only in the trek, they know there are tourists here, so they are not going to bother you too much, I guess.
To get to the trek, you need to go to which city in India?
Srinagar.
Okay. And so do you fly to Srinagar?
You can fly. You can go by with a jeep. The train stopped before the conflictual zone. It stopped in Jammu. So Jammu is the Hindu part of the Kashmir. And then Srinagar is the Muslim part. So then from Jammu to Srinagar, they cut every facilities. So you have to take a jeep or a taxi. So the best, I think, is to fly. You fly there and then you just go at the airport and then the trek, you have to drive 4 hours to go to the first base camp.
And do you stay in Srinagar the first night or do they take you directly to the base camp?
No, I stayed. Srinagar is a beautiful city. People are so welcoming. You don't have to look too much at the militaries and everything they're doing around, but the people there is wonderful. So happy to see foreigners because they don't see any foreigners. So helpful. The food is delicious. There is a little river and lake. You can just walk around. It's very nice.
So you stayed one night in Srinagar? Mm. Okay. And how do you decide which direction to hike the trail, from south to north or from north to south? Because you could go either direction, couldn't you?
Yeah, I think I didn't decide that. When you go with a guide and organization, it's just like, unfortunately, you just follow the group. But so I didn't. I think maybe they change it if the weather is bad or good. I don't know. But for us, they just took it this way. So.
And it went south to north.
Correct, yeah.
Okay. I think it seems, just from looking at the map, it seems like there are more lakes in the northern part. So maybe they want you to see, maybe they want you to go for a few days to build up to the pretty scenery.
Yeah, I guess so. Because the two first day, I don't think we've seen any lakes. And then we had all the lakes at the end. And they try to find a seed camp near lake every time. So it's beautiful, yeah. It's wonderful.
Is this a very expensive trek or is it very cheap? Or
I would say $150 maybe.
Oh, wow. That's not very expensive. Very cheap.
Yeah. But that's maybe the Indian price. I don't know, because they always have two prices. If you buy from other places, maybe it's with the foreigner, the white tax.
Yeah.
So that's what I paid, yeah. Mm.
Okay. So we were just talking about how there are lots of lakes on this trek. Can you describe the area for listeners? What does this area look like?
Okay, so basically the two first days is like a forest, and the landscape changes all the time. It doesn't feel you're in the Himalayas at the beginning. It feels like that's a little mountain, like a little bit like France, the Pyrenees, you know? But then you go up and you start seeing you have beautiful view and the high Himalayas, I think they call it like this. You have the middle Himalayas and the high Himalayas. And the most incredible, I think, for me was that there were flowers everywhere. Like in some parts, you just go down and see a lot of flowers, horses. It's like really unrealistic to see that in the Himalayas. In my opinion, I always imagine rock and snow. And then we had some part of the trek where it was rocky and more icy, a lot of water everywhere all the time. And obviously these beautiful blue lakes everywhere and rivers, beautiful rivers. So it's basically, it looked like a valley in the middle of the Himalayas. It's beautiful.
What I saw from the pictures also was that it was very green.
Yes.
Much greener than the other parts of the Himalayas that I've seen.
Yes.
And also there seemed to be almost no trees at all. It was very high altitude.
Yeah, the first 2 days we crossed a forest, beautiful forest. Maybe the first day. I got confused. But yeah, and then no trees until the last day, yeah.
And so just long views, very big views of everything.
Big views and grass and flowers. and rivers, wow, and horses. So it's really beautiful. Yeah, it's really worth it.
Are there any local people that live or are working up there, for example, shepherds with sheep or?
Yes, there are many. As well, we have a team like with us, literally, like with the, they had the donkeys and they were going up with us. They were cooking for us. And they were just amazing people, you know. They don't just cook, yeah. They gave everything. They wanted to show their region. They were so proud of Kashmir. So we met as well people just working here, very open-minded. They doesn't speak English or Hindi, but we could communicate as we could, you know. But yeah, it was wonderful, wonderful people.
That's always amazing to me that even when you don't speak a language at all, you can find ways to communicate, yeah, which I think is great.
Yeah.
So maybe it'd be why don't we go through a little bit of what this hike might look like for someone who's doing it.
Uh-huh.
It looks like you start in, is it Sonamarg?
Uh-huh. Yes. The first day.
Okay. Yeah. The first day.
So that's a village. So we do the first base camp was really near this village. Maybe 2 kilometers from the village.
Okay. And you said there's actually forest for the first couple of days.
Yeah, I think the first day, maybe the second day.
Okay. And so it looks like it was I don't know how to pronounce this, so I'm going to get it wrong, but Nichnai or Nichnai?
Okay, maybe.
You're not sure either.
I'm not sure either.
Generally, it looks like it was about 11 or 12 or 13 kilometers per day, maybe, mm-hmm, on most days.
Yes, yes.
Does that sound about right?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. And then where are the campsites? Are the campsites typically by a lake or a river or in a valley? Or where do they usually set up for the night?
I think only one day we were not... No, the two first day we were not next to a lake. But then the rest of the day we were near a lake or near a river. So it was beautiful. They choose like the best, I think.
Of course, they want the best views.
If you want to do it by your own, I think it's even better because there's so many spots. Like, I used to take my tent with me and I was all the time looking like, well, this would be the perfect place to camp. Like, there is many places. You don't have to look after places to camp. You can literally camp everywhere. It's really nice.
That's funny that you say that because whenever I go backpacking, my son and I, whenever we're together hiking, we always say, oh, that would be a great spot to camp. Oh, that would be a great spot to camp. We're always looking for good spots, yeah, even when we're going to go past them because we think next time we'll camp there.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. I do the same. So there were very interesting story about that because once we were very near a lake and there was this perfect green, flat, perfect place. No one was here. And I said, why we didn't come here, you know, and say, oh, they tell story about ghosts. There are some ghosts,
wow,
that come during night and everyone who came here had problem. And so no one comes here. And I was, oh, man. So even because obviously there are many believe in India is a very spiritual country. So there is places like are totally perfect, but because of their belief, they will not come here. But yeah, so so if you see an empty place and if you believe in ghosts, maybe don't go there. But if not, enjoy it. It's very lonely and very beautiful. Yeah.
That's fascinating because, you know, I wonder if there was something that happened there once upon a time and people still think about it or, you know, there must be. I wonder if there's some reason for it. That's interesting, though.
Yeah, they say there are stories, but who knows? Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. And then the second day, it looks like you go from Nichnai to Vishansar Lake.
Uh-huh.
And that one, it looks like it's about 12 kilometers.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember that lake?
No. Yeah. So I don't think we arrived to the lake. We saw it. I think we saw
it. Oh, okay.
We didn't camp near this lake. Yeah. It was actually, this was the hardest day physically because it was really tough going up. We lost half of the grain. I'm joking.
they're still up there?
Yeah.
They're still up there today?
Yeah. Many wanted to give up this day. But it was, for me, the most beautiful view because it was very, very going up. And we had the first, we didn't see lake the first day. And then we saw this beautiful lake. But it was a really nice walk. Yeah, I mean, all the lakes are blue and beautiful. But because the one was the first, I think it was we were all amazed and taking a lot of pictures with it, with this view.
Did you have to go over the pass, Nichnai Pass, that day? It looks like that's at 4,120 meters. There's a pass that you have to go over.
Basically, since the morning, we went up. And you never stop going up. So I think people struggle, yeah, a lot. And then the last part, was, yeah, maybe a bit tougher, but yeah.
All right. And then day three, it's from Lake Vishansar to Gadsar. And that one, it looks like it was 14 kilometers. So maybe a little further in distance, but maybe not as hard.
This one was the most beautiful. Not the view, but that where there's a valley, only full of flowers. So we went down only this day, mostly. And it was, in the beginning, very icy, and we crossed some part with only snow. So for some Indian, it was the first time they have seen snow. So they were like just playing on the snow. It was very wonderful. And then very dirty snow, though, but it was still snow. And then we arrived to this valley for maybe 8 kilometers. Only green horses and flower and river. So that was this wonderful part. Yeah, very, very beautiful.
The horses, do they belong to someone or are they wild?
Oh, I think they belong to someone, I guess. But they walk freely, yeah. Can say it's wild, it sounds better. Wild horses everywhere.
You know, I went on a hike a few years ago, and there were wild horses in the United States out in the desert. Mm-hmm. But here the horses, of course, in the United States were originally from the Spanish from 500 years ago, uh-huh. And then they got loose. And now they're wild. But they weren't wild originally.
So they were Spanish originally. Oh, well.
Mm. Yeah, yeah. Okay, and then the next day, it looks like it's from Gadsar to Mengenhap. Anything different or special that you remember about that part of the trail?
No, not really. I think...
Okay.
Not
memorable. It looks like once you get toward the end, there are lots of lakes.
Yeah, so I think it's 11, right? I think that's what it's like, 11 lakes. From here, the hike is not hard at all. Oh, yes, I think something important. I think day five, maybe I'm not giving so good information, but hopefully I'm not wrong. I think here we see one of the highest peak of the Himalayas. I think it was day five.
Wow.
So we have a view, and unfortunately, I don't remember the name, but I think it's the seventh biggest. Yeah, and so we stopped, and it was wonderful. Like they told us stories about, you know, hikers dying, trying to go up and up, and we were waiting because the cloud, it was very cloudy, and we couldn't see it. And they were just telling us a story, but we couldn't see it. And then suddenly we would look at it, and the clouds went out. And we could see it. So we were like, for at least 10 minutes, we could look at it and just imagine the stories about it. Yeah. So it was very, very
That must
nice.
Have been amazing.
Yeah.
And then you got to, it looks like Nuncol Lake is the last big lake where you camp, maybe on day five or six. It looks like day five.
Yeah. So here we went near a big lake, and then there were a lot of small lakes a little bit up. And a waterfall. So we went to, when we finished the trek, we just let our bag and went a little bit up. And it was like small lake, small waterfall, little like cabin, abandoned cabin. But yeah, yes, it was still very, very beautiful. Yeah.
During the trip, did you do other like side hikes or day hikes where you dropped your gear and went on a short hike away from the trail? Did you do that more than once, or was it just that one day?
No, it was very, very, very organized. In my opinion, like, yeah, you have to follow, you have, you know, time. I never did that before. It was the first time in my life that I followed a group when I was trekking. So for me, it was very new. But that is very nice. You meet a lot of people. And now I have people to hike with that I would not know if I would not do done this way. But obviously, you lose a little bit of freedom to just, oh, I like this place, let's go and invest it. But you could definitely do it because there is no dangerous places. Like, it's not a trek where you feel insecure to go. It's not. Apart if it's raining a lot, obviously, the stone go down a little bit. But apart from that, it's very easy to just go to the left and just adventure yourself.
What I'm thinking, I'm thinking about that there are different ways to do hikes, right? Lots of different ways to do hikes. And one of the things that you say is true, which is you lose something when you go with a lot of people, but you also gain something. You gain something different.
Yes.
So you gain that the friendships and the social part of travel, but maybe you lose something about, like you said, the freedom or maybe the solitude that you could have. So there are trade-offs, but you know, when you look back and you've done different kinds of hikes, you learn different things. So for me, I think it's worth it to do different ways of seeing a trail. So at the end, when you look back on this trip, why was it a good trip? What made it special?
For me, it's my first trek in India, it's the first trek in the Himalayas. I was only with Indian, wonderful Indian people. They taught me so much about culture, about, you know, but we laughed a lot. I met so many interesting people from everywhere in India. And obviously, the landscape is outstanding. I mean, it's beautiful. It's beautiful and it's peacefulness. When you live in India, is now is everywhere. People everywhere, cars everywhere, pollution everywhere, almost everywhere. Kashmir is so peaceful when you're right here and you're just in the middle of the mountain. It's like, it's a wonderful break and wonderful experience. Yeah. So yeah, very special in all this way.
Is there a particular memory or moment that stands out for you that where you remember as a highlight of the trip?
I guess in the day, let me check again, the hardest one, day two, the view was beautiful and it was very cold and it was snow there. And we, the fit people, we arrived very in advance. And we saw this random guy that was selling chai. And it wasn't chai, it was kahwa. It's like something in Kashmir between green tea and chai. And so we sat here and we wait for the other and maybe 30 minutes. And we just sit and it was just cold and somehow like cloudy. But it was such a, I don't know why, but I really appreciate it because it was very lonely. The group wasn't here yet. And we exercise a lot, so we were very tired. And with this warm chai here and just listening and, looking and just being quiet here with one of the girl of the trek. So I think that moment was very special for me.
I can picture it. That sounds fantastic. Mia Glandu, thank you for telling me about your hike. Before you go, I've got a couple of other questions, though.
Okay.
What is the dumbest thing you've ever done when you were hiking?
Okay. Bring an American friend to a ski tour when she didn't know how to ski.
How did that happen?
In the north of Sweden, where you cannot go back if you... if it's gone wrong. So basically...
Wait, go ahead. Tell me. I want to hear the story.
Okay. So basically, I hope she's not going to watch this. No. Basically...
Just don't use her name.
No, basically, I thought she knew how to ski and I'm very adventurous. So I just take my tent. I can go everywhere. I don't plan. So I tell her it's going to be tough, maybe 15 kilometers every day. But it's sometimes minus 20 degrees and we have to, you have to ski every day a lot, you know. And she said, yeah, no problem. I know how to ski. I didn't check. So we went to the trek and she couldn't ski, really. And that's, you know, in the north of Sweden, the sun goes very fast. So 15 kilometers normally, if you ski well, it was pretty flat. You do it in maybe 1.5 hours because it goes down and, you know, flat, you go very fast. But we did it maybe in 6-7 hours. And wow. That meant that we were in the middle of the night when we had to cross a lake. And this lake, unfortunately, wasn't well frozen because Sweden lately had weird temperatures changes. So it's still safe because you have this big fat ice, but the first ice wasn't frozen enough. So in the middle of the night with my friend that was freaking out, the ice break.
No.
And we had water until the knees. And she was panicking, and it was terrible. It was terrible. And she didn't
No frostbite.
No, well, you know, we had to go on the side, and I saw that there were summer paths, though. We went all the round, and we took like 9 hours to finish the first day. And then she said, okay, let's go back home.
Wow.
So that was my adventure in the north of Sweden. I was very frustrated. But yeah, always check with the people you are going to hike.
Wow. But she was okay. Nobody got frostbite or anything from the cold and the wet.
Because it wasn't cold. Okay. It wasn't too cold yet.
Ah, okay.
Yeah. So thank God nothing happened.
Wow. That's scary. Yeah. What's the worst weather you've ever experienced while you were outdoors?
So that was with my parents. We went from a refuge, mountain refuge, we call it mountain cabin, to a really high point in the Pyrenees. I think maybe it was, I don't know, I don't remember, but it was very high, only a rock. And we checked the weather at the cabin and they said, yes, it's going to be good. So we went for 2 days. And hike for 2 days. We picked the tent here. It was beautiful view, beautiful. We were totally alone. It was really rocky, so not so comfortable. And I think at 3 o'clock, a storm, really bad storm happened. So I don't know why everyone decided to take out the tent and go back. I think we would have waited. It would have been better. But I think everyone took the decision. So we packed. And we went, I think at 5, we started walking. And then it was a lot of lightning going on the ground.
Yeah.
It was very, you could feel the rocks, you know, like when you go on the ground and you feel it, you could feel it.
Uh-huh.
All the animals, the cows and the sheep, they were like together, like just hiding. So we realized like it was very bad weather and it was nothing, just the rock and us. So we started walking desperately down and we saw so many lightning just near us, just falling. So it was terrifying. I think everyone was just terrified. But thank God we arrived to the cabin only in maybe 8 hours. We ran back and then we just rest there a little bit and we went back for another day of hiking.
If you had that situation again, would you stay in the tent and not pack up?
Yeah, I had the same situation last summer, and we stayed and we just tighter the tents and everything.
Yeah.
And then it was okay. Yeah.
Okay, last question. What is the most valuable thing that backpacking and trekking and all this hiking you've done over the years has taught you?
That we are very little. I'm a believer, right? I believe in God. And for me, when I'm here, I say, wow, God is so amazing. And we are so little. We are so little. Comparing to the universe, to his creation. So for me, when I hike, I always remember that we are little and he's great. So yeah.
So I it's interesting that you say that because you're saying it makes us feel little, but you also feel greatness when you feel little. And I think that's, I completely understand what you mean because It's not a bad feeling of feeling small.
Yeah.
It's a good feeling of feeling small. Yeah. It's a feeling of how impressive the universe is and how impressive the world is.
Yes, yes, definitely. Uh-huh. Yeah, it's a good thing.
That's great.
It's positive.
Yeah. Mia, thank you so much for coming on the show. I really appreciate it.
No, thank you for inviting me.
Thanks again to Mia Glandu for telling us about her trek on the Kashmir Great Lakes Trail. And I hope that Mia and I have inspired you to hike the Kashmir Great Lakes Trek. And if you enjoyed this episode or any of our episodes, tell a friend about the show. We'd appreciate it. And keep in mind that this podcast is entertainment and meant to spark your interest. If you decide to hike the trail, do your own research. Like anything else worth doing, outdoor adventure has risk. So when you go, pack your common sense. And when you get back, tell me how it went. I do want to mention that Kashmir is not a place for everyone. Most of the hikes on this show are in locations where the risk is really during the hike itself, because you may be in a remote location far from the ability to get to a hospital, or there may be significant risk of weather problems or things like that. But I just want to make clear that Kashmir is still a disputed territory. There is still the potential for political or military violence or even terrorism in this area. That said, I do think it's worth doing an episode on an area like Kashmir, because the trekking there is fantastic. And for some people, they will put in the effort to make sure that they are aware of the situation, are aware of the present circumstances where they're going, aware of the risk, and it will be worth doing. I don't know yet where I fall on that spectrum. I do tend to be willing to take maybe more risks in these kinds of things than other people. I have not been to Kashmir, but I actually do hope to go someday. And I do think I could do this trek safely if I went through a trekking company, be careful what I do and where I stay in the cities that I'm in while I'm there, and keeping in mind that on the trail, there's very little risk to trekkers of political violence or anything of that sort. But of course, you know, the thing is to be flexible and to realize that if you have plans to go to a place like Kashmir and political violence does erupt, you're going to have to change your plans. And you have to be aware of that. And you have to be the kind of person who's willing to do that, I think, to consider a trek like that. So for some of us, this is an ideal possibility. For as Mia describes in the interview, there aren't that many tourists there because of the fact that it is in a politically contested area. And as a result, it's a unique experience and a unique opportunity to really see a place that most people are never going to see, and that has a kind of beauty that is unique to this place. And so for that, for a lot of us, it may be worth it. And for others, maybe this episode and listening to this episode and maybe watching some videos on YouTube about Kashmir or something like that might be the furthest you go in seeing this place. But for others, I hope it does spark your interest and that you will consider it, keeping in mind, of course, that you really need to understand the risks if you do it. In any event, I just wanted to make sure I said all of that. Before we go, I want to remind Trails Worth Hiking listeners that they can get a 10% discount on backpacking meals at OutdoorHerbivore.com. Outdoor Herbivore has great vegan and vegetarian backpacking meals, but as you know, if you listen to the show, you don't need to be a vegan or a vegetarian to enjoy these meals. They are delicious and filling. They use quality ingredients, and they're very easy to prepare on the trail. And they pack small, so you can fit a number of them in your pack for a long trip. Trails Worth Hiking listeners get 10% off on their order at OutdoorHerbivore.com by entering the discount code TWH10P. Outdoor Herbivore at OutdoorHerbivore.com. Check them out. Okay, let's talk about our next episode. Next time on Trails Worth Hiking, we again travel through impressive snow-capped mountains where we can see glaciers and wildflowers, this time on a trek of more than 100 miles. But this is no remote Himalayan camping adventure. It's in the heart of Europe. Yes, we are finally going to the Alps. where we'll travel the granddaddy of European trekking routes, circling the biggest peak in Western Europe, while we stay in charming hostels and quaint villages. Next time on Trails Worth Hiking, we travel the Tour de Mont Blanc in France, Italy, and Switzerland. If you have any questions or feedback on this episode, or ideas for future episodes, or even if you just want to tell me about a trek that you've done or a backpacking trip that you've done that you think might be interesting to feature on the show, feel free to reach out to me at trailsworthhiking@gmail.com. So start planning your next hike, and before you know it, you'll be on the trail. Thanks for listening.